SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Conference USA Underdog Podcast on UnderdogDynasty.com, SB Nation's home for G5 football. Joe Lonergan and Eric Henry here with you once again. I'm going to tackle some news and notes from throughout the offseason so far. We'll probably get to a formal bowl recap at some point as we still recover from all the holiday festivities. But today we're going to start with one of our famed guest spots with Mr. Jared McDonald of the Bowling Green Daily News. He, of course, covers Western Kentucky athletics. Jared, how are you doing today, sir?
Not bad, not bad. Like we were just talking about off the air a little bit, you know, it's a little bit of a slower time with the basketball season starting conference play. So it's a little bit more of a set schedule with the way Conference USA is doing it now that football's over. But, you know, still staying busy with these all the signings that's going on and the coaching changes and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of coaching changes, let's dive right into it. Western Kentucky defense, solid year for them considering everything going on. And Clayton White did a pretty decent job as the defensive coordinator there since he came in a few years ago. He has now moved on to a job with the South Carolina Gamecocks. What do you think of that move and anything strike you in terms of who's going to be able to replace Clayton White here?
Yeah, they actually already named a replacement for Clayton White. It's going to be Maurice Crum. He's in his fifth year, going to be in his fifth year coaching full-time at Western Kentucky. He was actually named the co-defensive coordinator ahead of last year. I think this was a move that was kind of expected to happen. Clayton White had been getting some attention previously for some other defensive coordinator jobs. I believe he turned down Memphis last offseason. He had some interest from Purdue, and I heard he turned down that defensive coordinator position before accepting South Carolina. But, you know, I think it was a move that was expected by the way that Western Kentucky's defense had performed. You know, they had the best scoring defense in Conference USA last year, a top 25 defense nationally. So, you know, I think it was something they were expecting and prepared to happen eventually, and it just happened to be this past weekend that it did.
Gotcha. The former Notre Dame standout you're talking about there in Maurice Crum. So interesting to see how he's going to be able to fulfill those shoes. Switching gears to the offensive side of the ball now. What was your take on how well Tyrell Pigram performed in his first year as the Western Kentucky starter? What's that quarterback room looking like now with Tyrell Pigram and DeVaris Thomas transferring out?
Yeah, you know, I'll answer the first part of that question first with Tyrell Pigram. You know, I think he's a guy that came in with extremely high expectations in place for him just because he was a guy that had played at Maryland before. You know, he was so highly recruited out of Clay Chalkville High School in Alabama, out of Birmingham there. And, you know, I think people got their hopes up really high for him. It's not like he was ever really bad. It's just the offense couldn't get going. You know, he didn't throw an interception until the bowl game against Georgia State. He finished the year with 1,603 yards, 9 touchdowns, a 57.6 completion percentage. So he was all right, but he wasn't, I guess, game changing. And I think that's what they wanted out of him. You know, they had some difficulty with receivers. They brought in a couple of transfers, JUCO transfers, and Mitch Tinsley and Craig Burt. You know, they had some people leave, Jaquez Sloan and Ja'Core Pearson, a couple of the best receivers in the 2019 season, entered the transfer portal. Sloan before the season started, right before that Louisville game, the opener, and Pearson after the second game of the season against Liberty. He actually just committed to Ole Miss, I saw yesterday. But, you know, they had some injuries at the receiving position as well. And, you know, the offense just never really as a whole got going, both Pigram and the running backs and the receivers, you know. And that's kind of transitioning into the quarterback room now. You know, Western Kentucky named a new offensive coordinator in Zach Kittley. He had a lot of success at Houston Baptist the last few years. And even this past year, they played 4 games there, 3 of them against FBS teams, you know, Houston Baptist, FCS. And they had a lot of success offensively with them. And shortly after Kittley came, it was the day after Western Kentucky's bowl loss, they actually announced the signing of Bailey Zappe, the quarterback from Houston Baptist. He had entered the transfer portal right after the Hilltoppers had announced the signing or the addition of Kittley to the coaching staff. And I think there's going to be some competition there if Pigram stays. You know, talking to Kittley right after he joined the team, right after he was announced, he said that he expected Pigram to stay, but that was before they announced Zappi's signing. You know, Zappi's a guy that threw for over 1,800 yards, 15 touchdowns, with completing over 65% of his passes last year in four games. And like I said, three of them against FBS teams. So I think he's kind of going to be the guy that people look at and expect to start the year at quarterback, just because he's familiar with the offense that's going to be in place with Kittley now as the offensive coordinator. And, you know, to kind of go off of that too, they also signed a couple of receivers from Houston Baptist, two of their best receivers, and Jareth and Josh Stearns. So there's going to be some familiarity there too with all those pieces around the offense now.
Totally makes sense. So I guess then, like you mentioned, there being pieces there to work with on the offense. Who is a young name that fans might not necessarily know off the top of their head that you think is going to make a difference heading into the 2021 season for the Hilltoppers?
You know, that's kind of a tough question just because they've had a lot of experience this past year, I guess more so on the defensive side. I don't know if it would be younger players as much as the incoming players that I think will have as much of an impact on the offense. You know, we talked about Zappi. I mentioned the Stearns brothers. You know, one of them was a freshman, another a junior. And, you know, everybody has that extra year of eligibility this year with the NCAA ruling that. But it's not a younger player, but it's a new player to Western Kentucky. I think that they really want to work into the offense next year is Adam Cofield. He's a guy that they signed out of North Dakota State as a graduate transfer. And, you know, he's a three-time national champion there. He's a running back who he says and who Kittley says can really do it all. You know, he can run the ball. He can catch balls out of the backfield. And Kittley said that's really what he wants to do with the offense. And, you know, he's a guy whose dad played in the NFL for a while. So I think he's a guy that they're expecting to come in and have, you know, a big impact on the offense this year. And, you know, some other younger guys that just to kind of stick with your original question, at the receiver position, I think is where it'll really show. You know, Dakota Thomas, he had a big showing in their final regular season game at Charlotte. You know, Malachi Corley is another guy at receiver. He's more of just an overall athlete. You know, he's a guy that can move around the field. He's a guy that they had, the coaching staff had talked about quite a bit throughout the entire season and got some more time. Got a little bit more action towards the end of the year, so I think they're going to expect more out of him going into the 2021 season now as well.
Okay. So I guess then let me ask this question. If I'm in Bowling Green, as I mentioned before we started recording, my fiance and I were just there to see a game that inevitably got rescheduled, which is a separate story of just our lives during COVID in general. What are some of the places that we have to go stop to eat, in your opinion, once restaurants can fully reopen?
You know, that's a good question. People ask me that a lot. There's a lot of chain restaurants in Bowling Green. There's not as much of a local scene. Downtown has some pretty good spots to go to. I particularly like a sports bar called 643. But I think a big reason is because it's right across the news. They're right across the street from the Daily News office. You know, they've got good prices. It's usually pretty chill, pretty relaxed, and I like that. Good spot to just, you know, have a drink and grab some dinner and watch a game on one of their TVs. But, you know, there's some other great places. I'm kind of drawing a blank now. There's a couple barbecue places that people like. But, yeah, it's a lot of chain restaurants, and if you – are craving a certain chain restaurant, you can probably find it here in Bowling Green.
There's nothing wrong with a good chain. Eric, as you can attest, I've proclaimed my love for Chili's many, many times on this very podcast.
Yeah, I think I'm more of an Applebee's guy. But
an Applebee's guy?
Yeah, we don't have one, but yeah, I love me some Applebee's, you know?
All right. Fair enough. Eric, anything to add to the conversation here?
Yeah, I'm going to jump in here really quickly. And I am not above a Chili's or Applebee's meal. You know, I don't know what our sponsorship situation is. Hopefully I'm not running amok in any situations there. However, I mean, I wouldn't be a go-to, but I would say this. I'll say this, and then I'll use this to kind of segue into my conversation and question for Jared. When I covered the Camellia Bowl 2 years ago, FIU's bowl game in 2019, I didn't do the Chili's or Applebee's, but I ate an insane amount of Waffle House. I counted 5 Waffle House runs in the 3 days I was there in Montgomery. So if I had to go to a chain of choice, I'm more of a Waffle House guy. I think, you know, just on its surface, I'm not gonna do the Chili's or Applebee's as a first choice. I'm a Waffle House guy.
I'm judging you a little bit for that one, I think. But you know, there are a few Waffle Houses here in Bowling Green. If that's your flavor, that's what you love. So I'm not judging you.
And the thing is, I didn't even get a chance to fully experience Bowling Green. I stayed in Nashville when I covered the game. So I'll have to, you know, maybe in 2 years we can circle back and see what Bowling Green has to offer as far as that's concerned. But Jared, want to kind of segue into this for you. Just, you know, was really curious. And I know Joe kind of touched on it in his line of questioning. Were the changes at, you know, offensive coordinator, and then of course, you know, the change with Clayton White going to South Carolina, did those things kind of seem as if they were in motion, or were those kind of, you know, kind of maybe surprises, so to speak, as far as the coordinator changes?
You know, I'll start off with the offensive side of things. I just think because of the way that the season went for Western Kentucky this year, a change at offense was kind of expected. You know, they were pretty stagnant offensively throughout the year, only averaging 19 points per game. You know, that was 12th out of 13 Conference USA teams that played this year. Their total offense was also 12th at 290.3 yards per game. FIU was the only team worse, you know, in total offense. So I think that was kind of expected, that something needed to change there. You know, they had a good season last year, but it was the defense that really carried them. And so they never really lit it up like they wanted to, like they did back in like the 14, 15, 16 years when Jeff Braum was here as the team's head coach. And, you know, that's kind of the expectation when Tyson Helton comes in and takes over as the head coach. And I think that's the hope for what will happen with Zach Kittley as the offensive coordinator. You know, he's a guy that comes in and in his introductory Zoom press conference, whatever you want to call it, he says, bottom line is I was brought in here to light up the scoreboard. He says they want to average 40 points per game, and he thinks that's a realistic possibility. You know, that's a big ask for a team that averaged 19 a game just last year. So I think that one was kind of expected. You know, I think it was kind of expected, too, that Brian Ellis would stick around. Him and Tyson Helton have been close throughout their entire careers. You know, Tyson Helton was a guy that coached some at UAB. Brian Ellis played at UAB. They both coached at Western. They both coached at USC under Tyson Helton's brother, Clay. So those two have been together for quite a bit of their careers, and Brian Ellis is expected to stay on in some type of offensive capacity next year. And then, you know, switching gears now to defense, you know, I don't know if it was something they were necessarily expecting right when it happened, but I think it's something that they were expecting to happen eventually. Tyson Helton has called Clayton White a future head coach on many occasions, and that's part of why they elevated Maurice Crum to that co-defensive coordinator position ahead of the 2020 season, because they knew this was something that was going to happen eventually. You know, he had been getting looks. He's been in that national conversation for some of these big defensive coordinator roles, and, you know, it's a move that makes sense for Clayton White. He's a guy that, you know, was from the Carolinas. He played his college ball at North Carolina State, and he coached there before coming to Western Kentucky. So it's a good fit for him. You know, I think there's good pieces in place still with the defense now, especially with Maurice Crum, like I said earlier, being the longest tenured full-time coach on Western staff now, you know, taking over that defensive coordinator role. So I think, you know, both of these moves were expected to happen eventually, but I don't know if the timing was exactly what they expected, but, you know, it kind of is what it is.
Jared, two-part question here, and this may be kind of tough to answer or tough to ascertain, but if you look at some of the moves that Western Kentucky's made, at least in terms of player changes and roster changes throughout the offseason, you've seen a certain amount of players, even during the season, you saw a certain amount of players enter the transfer portal. And then, as you mentioned in your opening with Joe, you saw, you know, some guys, whether it be Bailey Zappi or the Stearns brothers, you know, come in. Is it kind of a sense, Jared, that maybe there were some guys who weren't Tyson Helton guys, so to speak? And I don't mean that necessarily in a negative context, but just that, you know, you're going to have a certain amount of roster turnover with a coaching change, and maybe guys who were recruited from that previous staff under Mike Sanford who chose to leave. And will it be the strategy to kind of hit the transfer portal, you know, significantly harder, given the fact that they may have, you know, X amount of guys to replace. And this is a team that seemingly is in position to win now.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, kind of going off of one of those parts, you know, some of the guys, I don't think they were Tyson Hilton guys, and that's just kind of the way college football works, the way that the signing classes work. And like you said, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It just, it is what it is. And, you know, I think some of them, that's the reason why they entered the transfer portal. You know, I think some of them saw that maybe they would have another opportunity somewhere. You know, I look at a guy like Tyler Witt, who, you know, spent 5 years at Western Kentucky, an offensive lineman for them. He enters the transfer portal towards the end of the regular season, and now he's going to go to Purdue and play. So that's a Power 5 move for him, and it's a good move for him. You know, some of them, I think they weren't happy with the action that they were seeing or thought that they might have a better opportunity somewhere else. You know, another guy like Jakor Pearson at receiver, he entered the transfer portal after the second game this fall, and now he's going to go to Ole Miss and play for Lane Kiffin down there. So, and we all know what they can do offensively. And so that's probably a good move for him. But, you know, going into the signing period this year, I saw a lot of dissatisfaction on Twitter from Western Kentucky fans, to put it lightly, on that first signing day, because they didn't really – they announced one guy, Miguel Edwards, a cornerback transfer from Independence Community College. By the time we had talked to the coordinators, you know, 5, 6 o'clock that night, while everybody else is announcing player after player after player, and, you know, all the coaches, Brian Ellis, Clayton White, Tyson Hilton, whenever we talk to them, they're like, yeah, we're not worried. It's going to be waves. It's going to come in waves. You know, there's a signing period now. The transfer market's different, you know, all those types of things. We expect to get a handful here, a handful there. And, you know, they've really hit that transfer portal hard. They've only signed 2 players out of high schools of the 13 players that they've signed this offseason. So, you know, they've got a lot of guys coming in from other college programs. So, like you said, I think they're kind of expecting to win now.
I want to ask you, what could potentially be the state of the Western Kentucky rushing game with Gage Walker choosing to pursue his pro career? Well, obviously, we know that some players have the option to come back and return for an additional season, but Gage Walker chose to turn pro. So what do you anticipate kind of being, you know, as far as the, say, of the Western Kentucky running game entering 2021?
You know, they had Jakari Moses. He was kind of the other back that they used quite a bit this year. You know, he's a guy that can – you know, take it for a good chunk of change every time he gets it. He's just that athletic, that quick, and that type of player. He's a guy that's had to overcome a couple of knee injuries during his career, you know, really had a tough break at it, but, you know, had a chance at a full season this year, and I think he made a pretty good, you know, season out of it for what he got. And, you know, I mentioned Adam Cofield earlier on the podcast, the graduate student from North Dakota State. You know, he's a 5'11", 205-pound back. You know, he had a lot of success at North Dakota State. And I think most college football fans know, even if they don't follow FCS football a lot, North Dakota State's got a pretty dang good program up there. They won the last 3 national titles, and he was a guy that, you know, was a big part of their offense for that. And he was just looking for that next step in his career. You know, all these guys have aspirations of going pro, basically. And, you know, I think this is going to be that next step for him to try to reach that. And, you know, they expect him to be a big piece of this offense and a big piece of this running game next year. So I'm excited to see what Adam Cofield is able to do in a Hilltopper uniform.
As Joe knows, we like to, you know, have a little bit of fun with our guests, and we'll kind of talk about their travels and kind of their experience covering games. I want to ask you, start off with this one. What, I believe this is your first year around the horn at CUSA, correct, Jared?
Yes.
What was of the cities you had a chance to travel to, what was your favorite CUSA city?
My favorite CUSA city. I'm trying to remember where all I went that were CUSA cities. You know, I spent, and during football season at least, you know, I went to UAB, I went to FAU. I didn't go to the Charlotte game for football, but I was actually just there, you know, right around New Year for the basketball game. So I'll count that as part of this too. You know, I kind of liked FAU. There was some bad weather when I was there. I imagined it would be a little bit nicer in Boca without that. But, you know, that's never a bad spot to go. I'm from Maine originally, so anywhere in the winter that I get to go, you know, October to about April that's warmer, I will take it. I don't miss those cold winters at all. But, you know, I think overall, if I looked at the entire Western Kentucky football schedule, the place I'd say I liked the most was going to BYU at Provo, Utah, though.
Nice, nice. Okay, I can't say I've been to Utah or Provo, so you know that one. We'll give you a mulligan on that one because you haven't had a chance to hit the full gamut of CUSA city. So I'm sure the FIU contingency won't hold it against you that you chose Boca. Boca definitely, at least FAU Stadium, as far as it's concerned, is a great facility. Two part question for you. One, biggest change being coming from Maine to Bowling Green, and then the second question. Best press box meal that you've consumed, and I'll kind of lead you in saying that I know I was deprived of the normal press box fare. You know, I all the turkey sandwiches started to run together after a while at a certain point at the end of the year.
Oh man, I'll start off with the first part of that. You know, coming to Bowling Green from Maine, it was a little bit different. You know, I went to college in the Boston area, and then after college, I moved to Maysville, Kentucky, up in the northeastern part of the state, and it was a lot smaller than Bowling Green is. So, you know, I got kind of that northeastern, the mountainy type of environment there. Then I moved to more south central Kentucky, and it's been a good change. You know, I'm from a really small town in Maine. We had one stoplight, so Bowling Green's about the size of the largest city population-wise in Maine. So it's not bad, you know, and as you know, Nashville's close by. Like you said, you stayed there. So, you know, there's quite a bit to do. Weather's a lot better here. You know, get to drink some bourbon, watch some horse racing, bet some long shots, you know. So it's been fun. Best press box meal. Are you considering that just CUSA or just, or just in general?
No, that's in general, across the board.
Man, that's a pretty easy one. Ahead of this year, I went to a game at Ohio State, and they had some city barbecue and some smoothies. But after this year, I would definitely say it was at BYU. They catered some Brazilian steakhouse there, and it was like a full spread in a to-go box. It was impressive, and, you know, BYU, they're out more West Coast time, mountain time, so the game was later. But after that meal, man, all I wanted to do was fall asleep. It wasn't necessarily the best game either, so that probably played a factor.
You're killing me, man. The fact that, you know, BYU is able to cater in some a Brazilian steakhouse, as I mentioned, you know, for everyone listening, I wasn't being hyperbolic when I said every single press box meal I've had. And of course, we understand the circumstances with COVID, but five FIU games, five turkey sandwiches. So I definitely miss Jared. I'll give you this, which you'll have to look forward to at Charlotte. Charlotte does unlimited Chick-fil-A. So if you can get your hands on a few Chick-fil-A sandwiches there, that's always sweet. And then FAU, at least when I was there, they had a really good, like, Latin spread. That was pretty good. So I'll pass it back to Joe on this one. I know he's always more than happy to opine on the topic of food in the press box.
Hang on. I'm texting Will Healy to see how much Chick-fil-A he can mail me via USPS right now. I doubt he'll respond, but Coach, get back to me. but Jared, a couple more questions before you go. You mentioned that Jakor Pearson just signed with Ole Miss as he entered the transfer portal. You know, what do you kind of anticipate in terms of players coming back next year with the extra year of eligibility due to all the COVID stuff and how that'll affect Western Kentucky football?
You know, I think they'll have a handful come back. You know, some won't come back for different reasons. Some, like we've mentioned, have entered the transfer portal as graduate students or whatnot. But, you know, I think they'll have a good back. A lot of them haven't really announced it yet. You know, I asked Tyson Helton probably every media availability that we had the last recent season, you know, is this going to be this group of seniors' last game at the Houchin Smith Stadium? Is this going to be their last game ever? Is this going to be their last bowl game? And he would always kind of be like, you know, we're going to have those discussions once the season is over. We're going to have them after this point. And he never really said for sure who would be coming back or not. You know, I think as we get closer to the spring, more and more of these players are going to, I think we'll get a clearer picture of who will and who won't be back. But, you know, I think whoever else that Western Kentucky signs, could play a factor in that too, because some of these players might see their playing time or their ability to get on the field shrinking some of these new players coming in from other colleges, a lot of Power Five guys. So, you know, I think it's just a wait and see kind of thing for the program right now.
You mentioned talking to Tyson Helton. In your experience with him over the course of this year, what's kind of his mood and mindset with everything going on in college football at the moment? Obviously, won Coach of the Year this past season, got off to a little bit of a rocky start and started figuring it out towards the end. But what's kind of your assessment of Coach Helton at this point?
You know, I think he's a coach. I think he kind of takes things as they are. He's not a guy that gets really too excited about things or too down about things. He's pretty even keeled. He was definitely disappointed with the way that this season went. Western Kentucky, they played a tough schedule, Power Five program in Louisville to start things off. And then you get Liberty, Marshall, BYU, who are all at one point or in the final ranking were in the top 25, mix in a UAB team that won the conference. It's a tough schedule, but he said, I asked him, he always talks about looking at it as the whole body of work. So after their loss to Georgia State in the Lending Tree Bowl on December 26th, I asked him kind of looking at the whole body of work now, how would you evaluate it? And his answer was not good enough, obviously. It's a losing season and there's nothing good to say about a losing season. So he was disappointed, but I think he's optimistic about the future too, especially with, a new guy leading the offense and some of these players that they have coming through. But, throughout the whole season, he's pretty even keeled. I think he was just, for one, happy that they were able to play football. Like I mentioned, his brother, Clay Helton, out at USC, they had all the issues with the Pac-12 and, the Big Ten. Are they going to play? Are they not going to play? So just being able to get 12 games in is a win in of itself. I think his sights are kind of on this next year already. Like I said, obviously disappointed with the 2020 season in terms of wins and losses. He's pretty even keeled about most of those things.
That's kind of the impression that I get too, just from, being on those Zoom calls and stuff like that this year or watching them the day after, what have you. I think Western Kentucky football is in a good place with Coach Helton at the helm. Eric, before we let Jared get back to his day, anything else you got for the guy?
No, I think you pretty much wrapped it up there. Unfortunately, we tried to leave 2020 behind us, but technical difficulties followed me into 2021. So I apologize for those listening if there were any feedback issues in my mic there. I'm trying to leave the 2020 behind us, but it's just creeping up little by little, Joe. It's just following us like a little shadow on my arm, shadow behind my shoulder. So other than that, I think we're all good. Appreciate Jared for making the time.
Hey, no problem, guys. Anytime you want to have me on, just give me a shout.
Absolutely. For those listening, if you want to follow Jared on Twitter, you can at jmacdonaldsports, M-A-C, Donald Sports. Encourage you to check out his coverage of Western Kentucky basketball as that season starts to get into gear here. But until we talk again, at Underdog Dynasty on all the socials, at J-O-E-H-I-O underscore for me, at Eric C. Henry underscore for Eric. And of course, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify if you haven't already. Happy football watching, everybody. We will talk to you very soon.